Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. What a difference a year can make. On today's show, you get to listen and compare. First, you will hear from the new county warden, Brian Ostrander. He was elected only a few weeks ago. The focus of our conversation is a new 3-year budget passed by County Council 2 weeks ago. You will hear how this approach works and the aspirations of politicians for the upcoming year. There is a 6.5% increase this year and more than 8% the next year. The final year is nearly 9%. The warden will justify these hikes over the 3 years. I'm so pleased to have with me today the new warden and the mayor of Brighton, Brian Ostrander. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
It's always a pleasure, Robert. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to begin by congratulating you on your election as warden. Why is now a good time for you to take on the job of warden?
There's never a convenient time to take on a busy role, but, this is entering my 6th year as mayor of the municipality of Brighton and as a county councillor. This was not a role I wanted to tackle in the first term. I had lots going on locally. I wanted to play a good support role for county council in the last term. But I felt that now was the time to take on a leadership role at the county.
You delivered an acceptance speech when you were elected. In it, you suggested there needs to be a new funding model with the provincial and federal governments. Can you outline what those changes are?
Brighter minds than I would be able to come up with what that funding model would need to look like. All I truly know is that the municipal level of government, be it the lower tier, the local level, or the county level, depend heavily on property taxes, which is the most regressive taxation system we have in Canada. And it's a system that predates Confederation. It's a system that never imagined the local level of government would be tackling the things that we're tackling today. From a linear project perspective, roads, bridges, et cetera, it works fine. But from a social services perspective, even from, little old Brighton, from a parks and recreation perspective, it just doesn't work the way it was intended to work. And, this is no criticism of the sitting government. It is a systemic issue that needs to be tackled, frankly, from Vancouver to St. John's. It's one that needs to be tackled across the country. And really, as I noted in my acceptance speech, if I dream in Technicolor, it would be ideal for the municipal level of government to have a place in the Constitution, an actual place at the seat of Confederation, where we can have these mature conversations and not be constantly worried about, what shift in policy the government of Ontario will make that will affect boundary lines for municipalities or changes to upper and lower tiers, etc. But that's a conversation for another day. We are depending on our friends at the Association of Municipalities of Ontario, AMO, to help advocate for funding model changes. And, the current Progressive Conservative government has been very good about making sure monies flow to the municipal level. There's no doubt about that. But there's no guarantee. There's no source of revenue that our level of government can look at that waxes and wanes as the economy does. We're stuck with this property tax system.
You said about your dream in Technicolor and a constitutional change, and of course that I can see being very, very long term. But I have to admit, You're not the first municipal politician who's pointed out the faults and the shortcomings of the municipal property tax system. Where do you see any opportunities or potential for movement on such an important issue? Because as you're facing right now, we'll talk in a moment about the budget for the county, but your own municipal budget, you're dealing with realities right this moment. So where's the crack in the armor? Where's the light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, I'm not sure there is until there is that constitutional change. And I don't think that's on anybody's at the federal level. I don't think that's on anybody's radar. And I think the whole idea of opening up the Constitution is it just isn't going to happen. That's a simple reality. It's a scary thought for everyone across the country. So we just need a better deal, and we're going to depend on our associations. In particular, AMO, to help make that deal. I don't think it's a tomorrow. I think everybody's wrestling with dollars and cents. Certainly, our provincial friends are, and so this is not a tomorrow fix. We're going to have to live with the system we have today, but we need to keep talking about it, or it will never happen.
But is it such a big stretch to say, look, we just want a guaranteed flow of money in certain areas, a base amount, just like the federal government gives the provincial governments a transfer payment to hospitals, medical, whatever. I mean, is that pie in the sky?
It's not, and it already happens. We already get the Ontario Municipal, whatever it's called, the OMPF funding. We get OSIF funding, which is for infrastructure. So we already get that piece of the pie. But it's a calculation that is difficult for a layperson like me to sit down and say, I wonder what our number is going to be this year. And you try to do the calculation. It's not possible to do. You wait to see what the money's going to look like. Same with OSIF. We do need a consistent and measurable and predictable source of funding that is either, a percentage of sales tax or a certain percentage of income tax or as I say, something that waxes and wanes with the economy. But also one that recognizes that, a city like Toronto, with its, 3 million-ish people, is going to get the bulwark of those monies, and a smaller population base like Northumberland County, with a larger physical geography, may be left with shortcomings. So there's going to have to also be that. How do we figure out the geographical versus the population base? So it's not an easy solution. I know that. I don't throw this out thinking there's an easy solution. There's not.
One of the things that's at the heart of this is downloading of services and responsibilities. And it's been taking place for a long time, at least 30 years. And it's nothing new for municipalities. But how are things different now in the context of downloading? What are the pressures that you're feeling at the county level that you want to see ad addressed in terms of downloading?
That's a pretty big list, Robert. At the end of the day, we're dealing with community and social services, ODSP, and other work-based income subsidy issues. We're at the local level, like I said, parks and recreation. That wasn't downloaded, but it's a cost. It's a growth-based cost to our municipality that is impacting us in a huge way. Housing and housing initiatives and affordable housing, truly affordable housing opportunities, homelessness concerns, infrastructure from a downloading point of view, all these what were, as you say, 30 years ago, what were provincial highways are now county roads almost entirely, well, with the exception of the 401, entirely across Northumberland County, that's the case. These are just massive impacts that as I say, the property tax system was never meant to absorb. And yes, to be fair, the province has provided funding for all of those things. But in so many cases, and ambulances is a good example. So there's another one. Ambulance is a good example where, we pay 50% of whatever for the first year, and we don't get recouped for the other 50% until the following year. So where does that that second 50% come from? Well, it comes from the property tax basing, because you don't get half a person to show up. You don't get half an ambulance. You got to have the whole thing, and that's that, and that's how the system's designed to work. But it's not appropriate. It's not equitable.
I'd like to talk now about the budget and also the strategic plan, because those two things kind of fit together. There is a new strategic plan for the county. What is the role of that new strategic plan?
Well, like any strategic plan, it's to provide us with the guideposts and goalposts for the coming three, four, what is it? I think it's 4 year strategic plan. So for the 4 years, and it's goalposts for council, it's goalposts for senior staff, and it is all those things we want to see as we roll out those next 4 years.
Why did the county pass a 3-year budget?
Well, I think it makes sense to sort of look out those 3 years and see where the numbers need to be. At the end of the day, we will revisit each year. At the end of this year, we'll revisit for 2025. So nothing is set in stone. We're going to see what's working and what's not, and make those changes as it needs to be. But from an investment perspective, to get a concept of what we need to be looking for funding for, what we need to be tackling from an efficiencies perspective, it's helpful to know what the next 3 years are going to look like from a fiscal management point of view.
I've watched a lot of budgets, and usually there are several columns after the current year that kind of map out. What's the difference between those kinds of projections and what you've passed as a county? Is there really a difference?
Yeah, and I would say there is a distinct difference. In the past, what we've seen are sort of, here's where we estimate we might end up in the next 2, 3, 4 years after this budget. In this case, we have an actual budget. So we have actual budget line items, actual staffing line items, just as we would for the current year. As I say, we have to revisit those. We're required to, as and it would be good and right to. Revisit that for the next year, based on trends and based on what happened in the previous year. But we are set. If we're ready to go, we could simply say carry on. I suspect there will be some tweaking. Politicians hate to leave things alone, so I suspect there will be some tweaking for 2025. But we're ready to go, and it will be a much easier process for both staff and for council.
But how can you possibly predict what things are going to be like, say, 3 years from now?
Yeah, I would say that 80% of what we do is entirely predictable. We have an asset management plan that tells us exactly where our buildings and roads and all of that super infrastructure is that we need to take care of. So very easy from an asset management planning perspective to say, we know what we need to invest in to keep things running, to keep buildings working for the next. Well, really, for the next 20 years. To say the next 3 years is really a no-brainer from an asset management perspective. But there is a there's always that 20% of things that I don't my crystal ball's been broken a long time. I don't know what's going to happen come the end of this year. And yes, there will no doubt need to be adjustments.
But isn't there a danger when you start to lock things in that somebody could argue, oh, it's great that this has come up, but we said we were going to do this. We said we were only going to do this size increase. We said this, and you become locked in, and it becomes hard to be flexible or to move with whatever changes take place. How do you overcome that possibility?
Yeah, I guess that's always a danger, but I mean that could be a danger no matter what. People can come in to a 1 year budget process with a preconceived notion that come you know what or high water, they're going to be holding an X percentage point on the tax base. We've certainly seen lots of politicians do that. I guess they think that's the popular thing to do. I think and I hope that the popular thing to do is to properly serve our residents. And there isn't anyone that I talk to across Northumberland County or in Brighton, certainly, that doesn't understand that these services we provide to the people are costly services, and they know that. And there's a reason that government provides them. It's because the pi private sector just can't do so in a way that's profitable. So we have to. So yeah, there's always that danger. But you know, I look around the table at my six fellow mayors across Northumberland County, and I see a group of adaptable people who are ready to work on behalf of the good people of Northumberland. And to do that, we need to be flexible and ready to pivot when the time comes.
We were talking earlier in our conversation about the provincial government. And as we've seen, the provincial government flip-flops on policy decisions and walk backs on others. And we've watched them take away major revenue sources from municipalities. I'm thinking of development charges right now. The list gets pretty long. How do you know the figures will cover what is needed in that kind of context?
Well, I guess we don't. And what we know is what we know. What we know today is what's happening today, and we can make decisions based on predicting that we haven't heard that things are going to change, so we can predict that they will. When they change, we need to be flexible enough to change. And certainly that's certainly the case with regard to development charges and other issues under the current planning regime provincially. Local municipalities are having to make those changes. We don't have to like them, we just have to make them.
The final increases are 6.57% for 2024, 8.64% for 2025, and 8.86% for 2026. Those seem pretty high, but what factors are you feeling influenced those numbers to make them at the levels that they are at?
Yeah, so I mean, what's important, I think, to note here is that 2% on each of those years are going to two very specific dedicated infrastructure or dedicated levies. Pardon me. A 1% goes to a dedicated infrastructure levy. Another 1% goes to a dedicated housing levy. And I don't know anybody in Northumberland that doesn't think that infrastructure, which we remain behind on, isn't important to fund, or today that housing isn't important to fund. We know there's a huge waiting list for affordable housing or subsidized housing in Northumberland County. And I guess I shouldn't say I don't know anybody. There are very few people in Northumberland who wouldn't say, let's house the people we can house. So, you know, adding 1% when we're in the midst of a housing crisis where working people are having trouble putting a roof over their head. You know, how can we also not be compassionate and make sure we're adding, you know, a percentage point or so to reserves to ensure that we can house people moving forward? So really, yes, the increase, the real impact to the taxpayer, 6.5%, but from an operational perspective on, you know, how do we keep the wheels on the bus? It's 4.5% next year. You know, it's 6.5% the next year. It's almost, you know, it's, and I get that those are big numbers, and they are. But if you know, we also took a deep dive in the middle of the pandemic and came up with a 0% budget. When we do that, there's always a catch up. And so here we are, you know, but we can't get away with 0%. We learned that in the end of the last millennium, we learned that when governments all over the place were trying to stick to, you know, 1% or 0% or, you know, and it seemed popular at the time, but when roads start to crumble, it's not a good move.
I appreciate, and with all due respect, your arguments, and they make sense to a lot of people. But I'm sure that there are other people that are listening that are going, like, bottom line is, man, I got to come up with this extra $92 for the average taxpayer for the county portion, and then I got to come up with, you know, my portion for the local municipality, like Brighton or Port Hope or whatever. So, I guess the thing is people sometimes say, well, what about service reductions, or was there anywhere that you could have cut?
Yeah, and those are, you know, those are really fair comments. And certainly I'm a huge believer in driving efficiencies and making sure that we're sharing services as much as possible across borders and between levels of government. So I don't take that off the table. But when you look at the responsibilities that Northumberland County has, the vast majority of what we do, we're required to do, either under legislation or regulation. We don't get a choice on how quickly we respond to an emergency by ambulance. We're regulated to do that. We don't get a choice about who gets to be on ODSP or who gets to be on other social services. We're required to provide that. There are minimum maintenance standards, so we're required to provide plowing and road maintenance at a certain level. So when you look at all of those things, and so then when you take the few things that are possibilities to remove, things like funding to the hospital. Well, yeah, I guess we could remove funding from the hospital. It's about $250,000 a year. It goes to both Campbellford and Northumberland Hills. But is that the right thing to do in a world where hospitals need funding too? And we need to help them drive those efficiencies for the citizens across Northumberland. We so you want to break in?
No, go ahead.
The other sort of soft service that we fund from the county is court security. The courts are here in Coburg under the Act, under the Police Services Act. That means the Coburg Police are required to provide court security. But it's a Northumberland County issue. So, is it right for all of us to help support Coburg Police in that endeavor? Well, I think it is. I think it's appropriate for everyone to pitch in. If we were sitting in another jurisdiction, that jurisdiction would be covered by their regional police service or by their local police service if you're in Toronto. But we have three police services in Northumberland County, and the courthouse is here in Coburg. So, a small local police service is asked to provide court security. It makes sense that we would chip in. And so there's another $250,000. More.
Speaking of all these little things that add up, you recently made a decision at County Council to purchase the former retirement residence in Coburg for $2.3 million as a new home for transition house. Why is that a good move at this time?
Well, listen, these decisions are never taken lightly, and we don't rush out to buy every piece of real estate on the market just to say we did. 310 Division Street, a former retirement residence, makes a lot of sense from a investment perspective. It's a good building. It's with very little work to be done. It's ready to go. It will replace the existing transition house, which is without saying anything about the good folks who are running transition house, it's tired. It's an old home. I don't, it was never built to accommodate shelter space. It was always meant as an old home, whereas this is a building where each person will have their own room and their own bed. There will be common elements. There will be space to provide services to those in need. This just makes sense. And so we have purchased it with the intent of holding the mortgage for the Transition House Board, who will buy it back over time.
One of the last-minute items that got approved for the budget was a 6-month pilot addiction treatment program for nearly $250,000, just at the last minute. Why was that a good thing to do in your mind?
So I always prefer to have lots and lots of information and dialogue before we make these decisions. But at the end of the day, we know that there are addiction concerns in the community. We know that in particular, after the purchase of 310 Division, those concerns were brought forward by a lot of local residents and their concern around some of the folks who may be accessing these services with those addiction concerns. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to have a shelter space of this nature without also having treatment availability. So we want to see if this pilot will work. And rather than doing sort of band-aid solutions that will get people off the street for a night or two, maybe we can actually help people with their underlying issues, with the reason maybe that they're on the street. And you know, that's part of the role of government. You know, I know that sometimes I'm seen a bit of a hard case when it comes to these things, but I think part of the role of government is to lift people up. And if we're not doing that, then we're not doing our job.
What do you say to people on a fixed income or seniors who are struggling in the light of all of what we've talked about so far?
Well, by and large, many of these folks are renters that you're talking about. So the tax increase will affect them over time with their rent. Now, certainly, there are some seniors who are still living in their homes and they're on a fixed income and they're going to have to pay the additional taxes just like everybody else. And what I say to them is, I know things are hard. I know things are difficult. I know prices are going up, but they're going up for us too. And you know, if we're to deliver at the same services at the same levels we are, you know, be it social services or paramedical services or community paramedicine, which of course is funded by the province, but or at the local level in Brighton, if we're to continue to clear sidewalks, you know. Which we're not required to do under the province. We could pass a bylaw saying everybody needs to get their shovel out and clear their own sidewalk, but we don't want to do that. We know that there are plenty of seniors in the community that would then have to hire someone to do that. So we take on that role. And by doing that, yes, it means that the senior doesn't have to hire someone to shovel the sidewalk, but it does mean that somebody has to pay for that.
Brian Orstrander, thank you so much for talking to me today.
It's always a pleasure, Robert. I appreciate the time.
That was Mayor of Brighton and new County Warden Brian Ostrander. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast, or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.